Christian Parenting.
Welcome to the Living Wholehearted Podcast. We are Jeff and Tara Mattson, a husband and wife team who is shrinking the integrity gap in our own lives and helping others do the same. I'm a leadership and organizational development coach, and Tara is a licensed marriage and family therapist.
We believe that if you have a following, you are a leader, and how you lead matters. Whether you are leading in the home, work, or community, we are bringing you biblical, clinical, and relational wisdom to help you in every relationship that matters most to you. None of us do this perfectly, but we are leaning into the reality of our humanity and profound wisdom of grace. Can beauty still come from something so broken? Can hope be born through pain? What are the dangers of trying to help before we have done our own healing? How do we keep our own pain from spilling onto those we love while we're in process? When is it appropriate to share about our healing journey with those in our wake of influence? Well, get ready as we talk to Tony Collier about how to embrace our pain and discover hope and healing.
Tony is a hope coach. Love that term. And the founder of Broken Crayons Still Color, an international women's ministry that helps women process their brokenness and reclaim hope. She's a popular speaker and consultant who helps organizations with creative marketing, leadership, student ministry, and strategic planning. It's her passion to show women that they can be both broken and beautiful as they work out their healing at the feet of Jesus. Tony also teaches regularly at Story Church Atlanta, founded by her husband, Sam. And Tony and Sam live in Atlanta with their daughter, Dylan, and new baby boy, Sam Jr.
So good to have you, Tony. We're so excited for this conversation.
Gosh, me too. I'm super excited.
Okay, so we asked this of a lot of our leaders, and the reason is because we believe strongly that our stories are playing a powerful role in how we lead, sometimes in a really unhealthy way, hopefully in a healthy way. Talk a little bit about your story behind the scenes and what's led to you doing the ministry that you're doing today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because all of the titles of my organization, the titles of my book, it all has like the word broken in it. Okay. And it's because I've got a really broken story, as do many of us. And my story started in Houston, Texas. It's where I was born and raised. Best state in the world. We're a little crazy, but we're bold about it, you know? And I grew up in a blended family. And when we were in the third grade, my mom had a stroke and was paralyzed on her left side, and it really just changed the dynamics of our family. My stepbrothers, they went to go live with their mom. My dad started working overtime, and I ended up being my mom's primary caregiver at just 8 years old. And so my counselor would call that parentified child syndrome, where, you know, there's a natural progression of when you kind of switch roles with your parents around like late 40s, early 50s, and you start to take care of your parent. Well, that started for me at 8. And so just lost a lot of that awe and wonder. And my childhood kind of became an adult too quickly and ended up just numbing and stuffing the pain from so many different ways. My dad was verbally abusive, and so that weighed on me as a little girl. And at 13, I lost my virginity and started drinking alcohol and doing drugs, and I ended up with an eating disorder and leaving my parents' house at 16 and just going wild, you know, and just trying to stuff all that pain, and ended up in a marriage at 20 years old. So got engaged at 19, left college, said I was in love, and it ended up being a really toxic and abusive marriage. And I ended up at a church finally getting saved at 21. And I was like, yes, my life is going to turn around. The church was kind of spiritually abusive and toxic. And so it was just so much brokenness and trauma. And then that turned into, of course, anxiety and depression and suicidal ideation and thoughts and all the things. And then at about 25, I was like, man, my story is just completely broken. And I just don't know if God's going to be able to use that. And, you know, around 25 is when I had an epiphany that actually God does his best work in the broken places. And so my ministry comes from that. My book comes from that. My podcast comes from that. Like, let's be absolutely broken and watch God do his best work. And so that's it, like a little nutshell there.
Oh, wow. I love it. That was, I mean, we hit a lot of key pieces from spiritual abuse to verbal abuse to parentification. Yeah. I mean, all things that people can pull a piece of that story, maybe all of it in their own blended family, a lot of loss and trauma, as you said. And yet talk a little bit about, maybe give us a glimpse into a moment in your story when you're like, he's using it more than just a ministry and a book, because those are amazing and they're helping other people. But in your own story, when did you start to see the beauty coming out of the ashes that he speaks of in Isaiah 61?
Yeah. I also really just love, sidebar, that you are in the mental space field. And so I just love that you're like, yep, parentification. I know exactly what that is. Here we go. Let's make it happen. I just want to highlight that. I think that's really beautiful. I feel really seen. I would say one of the parts of my story that stands out is as I was transitioning from my first marriage with my one-year-old daughter, I had gotten her like the big 64 box of crayons, you know, the one with the sharpener in the back, right? Like that's like our iPad and stylus, right? Like we were just like, we're going to color all day, you know? And I gave her that big old box and I set her in the living room, set her all up. And I came back after cooking in the kitchen and she had just robbed these crayons of their dignity, quite honestly. She had broken them. They didn't have any clothes on. They were naked all over the floor. And I was cleaning it all up. And at the time I was in ministry at a church that was really unhealthy, but I was a youth pastor. I was speaking to middle schoolers and high schoolers. And here I was hiding that I was going through this divorce. And I remember having to go and speak at this middle school in a few days. And I was like, there's just no way. Like, there's just no way at all that I'm going to be able to get on the stage and do anything because, I mean, I'm just completely broken. And even more than that, you know, shame wasn't really a word back then, wasn't like a buzzword, but I was in a shame bubble. And I remember looking at my daughter and, you know, how, like you're just talking to like your 2-3-year-old and they don't know what's going on at all. But I looked at her and I said, baby, why did you break all these crayons? Like, what happened? And she just looks at me and she's like, mommy, color. She's super sassy, always has been, and turns around and still starts coloring on this little Frozen coloring book. And, you know, I think what even maybe God was trying to speak to me in that moment is, yeah, you know, I broke all these crayons, but they still work. But they still serve a divine purpose. And my little 2-year-old had taught me that in that moment, that, you know, there is still beauty that can come from the most broken things, that God does his best work there. And more than me speaking to 200, 300 middle schoolers in a few days, there was something in me in that moment that just wanted to be a healthier mom. You know, like I had had my own broken parenting experience growing up, but even from that and with that, I could still be a more healthy, a more healed, a more whole parent. And I would say that was probably one of the most pivotal moments in my story.
That is amazing. And what those word pictures. And just a side note, again, I am a mental health provider initially, a licensed professional counselor and marriage and family therapist. And I do more executive coaching now in working. I love Hope Coach. I might steal that. I love that. I'll be a Hope Coach. But The piece that catches me the most is we often use crayons, drawing, to heal from our trauma and with kids particularly. And so I just even love the visual God gave you. Yeah. And the reason is it gets in touch with that little girl inside all of us, no matter how old we are, or the little boy, even boys color with those crayons.
I love you, Jeff.
It's so good. So even that word picture is powerful and so much like God.
Well, Tara is a professional counselor. We have the mental health side of things. We've got a team of wonderful clinicians. We founded our organization around the gaps that we see in the church, clinical research, and the relational wisdom we've personally and professionally experienced in our own journeys. And therapy has connotations depending on our stories and culture, et cetera. You are all in, and the way you just described it, which is fun for us because this is a sweet conversation where we believe shared belief in the power of doing good work with those that are doing that with character and competency. But, you know, what has been a role when you think about, you talked a little bit about the journey of counseling. What's been the role that counseling's played in your journey to healing? Here you are today coming through all that you've come through and are going through still, and we never arrive, right?
Yeah.
And so Tell us a little bit about that, and what do you hope others will know and embrace about professional counseling?
That's so good. Well, my like, just get it done, that part of me is like, get you a counselor. Okay. That, I mean, it just, that here it is. Okay. I'm laying it on the table right now. If you're listening right now, get you a counselor. It is what it is. Okay. Now here's a little bit of backstory. I don't say that without authority. And by authority, I mean experience and story. When I first started counseling, I went every single week for 2 years. We worked on chronic insecurity. We worked on this bottomless pit I had that, you know, anyone could tell me anything, but I didn't hold on to compliments. I didn't hold on to accomplishments because I just wanted to achieve. And when all the while I was really looking for validation and for the most important person in my life, my father, to say, Tony, I'm proud of you. I mean, we processed through anxiety, and I did some sleep training because sleep was really hard with so much anxiety and just all the things. And then when I got remarried, we hopped into marriage intensives. We got a marriage counselor. There was some sexual trauma in my past. I went to a sexual trauma counselor, and then I went to a 16-week sexual trauma group. And now I'm in what's called a confessional community with Dr. Kurt Thompson and a group of 6 other women. And I have my own personal counselor. I mean, listen, okay. I am all counseled out, okay?
You've done the work, girl. No,
I have done, will do, always the work. And the reason why is because, I mean, again, I was a youth pastor on staff, ordained minister before I got into counseling. I was on stages with microphones in front of audiences without doing my work. I know what it is like to stand on stages, to call myself a leader and not be whole. And it's not cute and it is not great. Okay. And it is the quickest way to get canceled. Okay. If we want to use that word, which I hate, but it's true. It's the quickest way to fall hard. And so I've already seen that side. I've already been burnt out. I've already publicly gone through a divorce. It's all good, y'all. It is better when you do your work. I just have a strong belief, I'm getting real passionate about this, that God doesn't just want holy people. We have seen people that can spit out scripture and they just mean, okay? They're just flat out rude and they don't know how to be kind. And maybe it's not because they're a wicked person, but maybe there's weakness in them. Mm-hmm. Weakness that comes from some sort of trauma or pain or ill relationship or the inability to interface with people on healthy levels. Whatever it is, we've seen holy people not be whole. And I don't want that for my life. I want to be a holy, whole, healing, ing, because it's not gonna stop, person. And I have seen every area of my life transform because of that. I mean, all of it, because our unhealth and our toxicity, it doesn't stay isolated. It leaks all over the place, okay? If I'm an unhealthy wife, I'm an unhealthy mom and daughter and coworker and friend. And so I could just talk about counseling all day. All the different types of counseling. I've been in EMDR. I've gone through story therapy. I'm like, what y'all want? Okay. What y'all want to talk about?
Well, let's talk about the kind of misnomer. I don't know what it is. I think it's better now. Fast forward 20 years from when we started, even in 10 years, 5 years, it's way better. But there is a connotation still in different pockets in the church, particularly that have stigmas around counseling, and the statement of like, really, all you need is Jesus, the Bible, and God. Yep. And there's some bad theology in that from my bias, but speak to that, Tony, from your own journey, because you have been teaching on stage, leading, teaching the word of God, and then also doing it from a place of doing all the other things in our mental health field.
Okay.
Speak to that particular person who's still saying, yeah, but. I don't know if they're listening to this podcast, because to be honest, we might not attract those people.
They know what's going on. They know what's going on here.
But it's helpful other believers to know that there are a lot of Christians that have fear of counseling and stigmas.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And I still get approached by it. I mean, I have a public platform. I have people that are just like, really? I mean, I think you could just have a little bit more faith. I'm like, okay, sweet girl. But I would say one of the scriptures that I stand on now is Romans chapter 12, verse 2, like, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. Your mind. Okay. Like, we're talking about your mind, the neural network that is influenced by your story and your relationships and the things that you do. I mean, you know, many, you know, this tier, like so many psychologists always say, like neurons that wire together, fire together. The way that we have experienced life is the way that we live in our lives. And I just believe that God has equipped mental health professionals to help us process through that. One of the things that I like to go through every year is called this mental health collective that's put on by Chick-fil-A's Windshape. And it's literally a room of pastors and then mental health professionals. And it is mind blowing because us as pastors, we're like, we have people that are hurting in the church and they're not just trying to be mentally healthy, but they're trying to overcome mental illness. And there's somebody probably listening on this like, oh, there's a difference. Abso-freaking-tutelutely, there's a difference. There's a difference between when you're trying to stay in shape, right, physically, mm-hmm. and when you have an injury. If I'm trying to stay in shape, I'll probably go to some little cool YouTube video and it's all good. Like, I don't need a licensed professional to try to build these abs that are not abs, my one big ab. But if I'm injured, okay, if I have an illness, I need a professional to tell me what's going on with my body, who understands the biology of my body. It's the same with our mental health. We're not just throwing ourselves into spaces with pastors who don't have the training, if we're being honest, me personally. And I've done my work, but I'm also getting certified in crisis intervention and suicide prevention. But I mean, that's just a minor little certificate compared to what my counselor and what you, Tara, I'm sure have gotten. And the truth is, I want a professional. Mm-hmm. And I just think that we have seen the church fall. I think we've seen it, y'all. Okay. We've seen the pastors fall, and we've seen pastors unfortunately commit suicide, and we've seen pastors lose their family and their livelihood and unfortunately impact the faith of others. We've already seen it. So let's not get it twisted here, y'all. A new path needs to be forged, okay? We need healthy leaders mentally, physically, and of course also spiritually as well. And I just personally think that when we start to lean into that and accept that, we'll see better churches and better faith leaders in different ways. And I think it's beautiful.
Man, we're going to just drop the mic.
I know.
That's it right here now, people.
That's it. I need to go sit down.
Tell me, can you guys move to Oregon? Can you guys come be our neighbors, our friends? I mean,
I've been trying to get to Oregon. Let me just say that. Okay. Cause it's stunning.
I'm pretty confident we were supposed to have met you a long time ago. So this is just okay, timely. Oh my gosh, you are so fun.
I love it.
Well, yeah, come on out. We love to come alongside
and the passion,
couples. So
the passion is there. Oh, it's awesome.
Well, I actually want to go back to something you said earlier because the Spirit's kind of prompting me there. And I go, you said you went to a spiritually abusive church. I want to actually poke a little bit and say, can you clarify that a little bit for people? Because I just did a training on it for counselors and pastors through the AACC, the American Association for Christian Counselors. They've got some great resources as well. Yes. And I do think it's kind of a key place right now where people are really confused on what is toxic faith and what is healthy faith, because it all gets blended together. Like you said, we've seen it all happen. So clarify what you saw versus what you're trying to build in your guys' church and in the things that you're teaching.
That's so good. I think at the end of the day, we have to, and maybe we don't have to, maybe it's naturally happened. I think that people have become more aware of the word abuse and the actions that come behind it. And what I mean by that is we get the gift and the opportunity to work with a lot of domestic abuse survivors, those that have transitioned from verbally abusive, emotionally abusive, physically abusive environments and relationships. And the one thing that has been so interesting is that many of the women, a large percentage of the women, first say, I don't think I was abused. And then they start to describe their situation. And we're like, no, I do think there was some abuse there. And I think what we just have to maybe not dumb it down to, but bring it down to is that there are people in this world that are weak and there are people that are wicked. And you do not have to be wicked to abuse someone. You can come from a very weak place, have parts of your story that have been untended to and unhealed, and unfortunately abuse someone. And so I want to say that because I think a lot of times we hear about spiritual abuse in the church and we deem these leaders, oh, you're wicked, you're a horrible person, I can't believe it. When really, that could not be the case. They could just be very weak in some areas. One example that I explained to my counselor, and she was like, oh, Tony, I definitely think there was some spiritual abuse there. One example is my old pastor, would always say that my purpose was connected to him. And he used this example, and he said that only one tree can live in the house of a church, and that's the pastor. His roots are deeply put into the church, and we're the branches. And so when we invest into his purpose, into his calling that God has on his life, he'll go higher, he'll grow higher, and we'll grow higher too. But when we leave the church, if we ever were to leave, we get detached from the purpose, and then our purpose could die. Now, there was a lot of manipulation that came with that, a lot of, you know, subtle threats and narcissism and saying, you know, I know you want to go do this opportunity, and I know you think you're supposed to be speaking in these schools and at these different places, but those are just, you know, the ways that the enemy will take you away from the purpose that's here in this church. And I mean, it really was weird because in the moment, I was so young and naive and new in my faith that I was like, man, if I leave, like, that means I'm not going to be able to do ministry ever in life. Like, I can never leave this church. I have to stay here. When in all actuality, he just had deeply rooted insecurity. He needed people to stay with him because he needed belonging and he was afraid of abandonment. Well, unfortunately, in his weakness, that became spiritually abusive for me because I started to also believe that God viewed my purpose like that as well. I started to believe that if I did anything wrong, if I said anything wrong, if I didn't do quiet time every single day, God would rip away my purpose. And it gave me this very thwarted and weird view of who God was, that he was this big, mean God. And unfortunately, I didn't see it until I left and I went to a healthy church. We joined North Point Community Church under the leadership of Andy Stanley. And we were like, who is this God that he is talking about? That's a real kind God. We don't know what's happening here. But it was really hurtful, and it has taken a lot of counseling, one, to forgive my pastor, but also to forgive myself for the belief that I was so naive and so spiritually immature that I couldn't tell the difference between a healthy ministry and an unhealthy one. And then also healing in my mind about who God is and what he really did have for me. Mm-hmm. And what he had for me is not tethered to anything on this earth. It is heavenly. And so, yeah, that was my story about that. It was a little weird.
Thank you for sharing that. And absolutely. I'm so sad for the earlier version of you, Tony. You know, for now Tony. You would discern that. But yeah. Two things I heard you kind of saying, and I'll just say in maybe my own terms. But one is any church or any person that says, I am the way, or we are better than them over there.
Like Jesus.
Okay. And yes, exactly. Yeah. In a less maybe overt way, it can be as simple as we're doing church the right way. Then they're not doing it so well, right? That's subtle. Or if you aren't investing in our church and serving somewhere, which serving in the church is fantastic, like it's an important part, but there's kind of a manipulative, like if you're not serving here, we don't want you here. Go to another church where you can sit in the pews. You know, those subtle things that tend be vulnerable. And the other thing that you didn't say, but I want to point out, is you were going to this church before you started your healing journey. And one of the key things is we are drawn to spiritual communities that are familiar to our families of origin.
Woo!
And if we don't do our work and get healthier, then we will be susceptible to that.
Wow.
So unhealthy churches do attract, or more toxic, do attract a lot of abuse survivors. And so it's just a constant awareness we want to bring, especially to church leaders, but the vulnerability and the liability of leading and making sure we've done our own work is more important than ever.
Wow, that's so good. Woo! Well, you guys are getting free counseling. Thanks, Tara. Woo!
Okay. You're so good, Tony. I love it. You make me feel good. There's more we want to go to. Do you want to take a question, or because I have more I want to ask Tony.
Pivot for a second here. So, I mean, it is so clear that you want to share your story. You love to share what God did, what he can do. It just exudes out of you, which is beautiful. I love this interview and this time together. Leaders, sometimes can do that for the wrong reasons. You do it for the right reasons. But let's talk for a second a little bit about healthy vulnerability in leadership. Okay. And you know, we have, how do you know the difference between when it's time to share something and go from it, from working through it in private to sharing about it in public? What kind of discernment really do you use, Tony, in that space? And let's just hear what you get for us.
You know, there's this term that I use in my book called hope postured. And what it simply means is we're all going to have the presence of darkness and brokenness and a little crazy and ratchetness. I mean, I've been there all around the corner. You know, life is just hard, right? Like, I just had a newborn and I'm like, oh, yay, I'm going to be so happy. And then there are just some nights that's like, why did I do this to myself? You know, and you get stuck in, you get stuck in the guilt of like, well, I prayed for this baby, but also it's so hard. Like, but there are moments when I'm in those spirals and I remember my hope posture, and my hope posture doesn't dismiss that I have all those big feelings and those negative emotions in those moments. My hope posture says, but it's going to be okay. And I'm going to make it through. And I think that a really good indicator of leading from a place that's vulnerable, but also healed or healing in some place, a good litmus test or thermometer is hope, I think, is being able to be hopeful about what's to come. It's to acknowledge, this is where I am, this is where I was, but there's hope. And I think we see it right on social media. Like, man, I remember the days where I was so unhealthy and I wanted to tell all my business on social media because I've always just loved to talk. And it just was dark. It was like, oh, girl, I done broke up with this man. And girl, I got drunk. I can't even believe it. And life just sucks. I mean, it was dreadful. And when I think about what the 300 people that followed me then, it's like, I feel so sorry for them because they're looking to me as a leader, but they leave hearing my voice and hearing my story, feeling even worse about theirs. I think a great indicator is when we can start to share about our brokenness and the people that we get to influence that God has gifted us to stand in front of or speak in front of or just share with around a dinner table, they leave more hope-filled, mm-hmm. right? And there are parts of my story now that I haven't shared yet because I'm not ready. There are parts of my past that I'm just, you know, I'm still a little bitter about. I'm still real tender in certain places, and I don't have the hope posture yet. And there are many things like in my book that are there, and it's great, and I'm so grateful for it. But I think we just got to be careful, man, that we've got to be aware that we have leadership and influence in every single relationship, in our kids, in our husbands, in our next door neighbors. We have influence, and we have to be so careful with that so that we're not leaking on people, you know?
There's the scripture there that it might benefit those that listen, oh. That kind of that tagline then.
And
that's what you're describing, yes. Right here, you know, just that discernment.
Ephesians 4, I think.
Yes.
Discernment.
Yeah, okay, look at us.
Yeah, all right.
We're working together.
4:29. No.
Yeah, that's exactly. I have to go back to that scripture quite a bit because I am a talker too. And as verbal processors, mm-hmm. you can see that recognizing, like, knowing who you are, your wiring, mm. and when is it appropriate to be doing those with those who follow you in your wake? Yeah. And when are you doing that with your safe people,
which
is a small little group? And so I love that. The hope posture, so good.
Yeah.
Okay, so you talk about all kinds of things in your book. One of the things you talk about is toxic communities and healthy communities. We kind of talked a little bit about spiritual abuse. Maybe go to, like, what are three red flags that people can go to discern if this is a healthier community or toxic community? We're jumping all over, but I want people to dabble a little bit in the book and the truth that
that's
you bring
so
to
good.
Me.
I love it. One of the things I talk about in the book is, again, it's so interesting that the Spirit's just kind of leading me down on this, but is, again, people that are weak and people that are wicked. People that can hold the gravity of our stories, which I love how you said it's a little bitty group, okay? Because oftentimes it's not this big grand group. It's not the 5, 6, 7 friends, but it's the one or two who know you deeply. And I think one of the red flags that I had to notice really early on is that there were people that could not carry my brokenness. And it is not to say that they're not good people. It's not to say that they can't be in my life in other seasons, but there was a specific season when I needed some people that could hold the weight of divorce, the weight of abuse. And so I think being able to talk with people openly about that is a huge deal. And identifying the people close to you and asking them and speaking with them about the things that you're battling through and really being honest about if they can handle it or not. I think another really big thing was just negativity in your friends. And oftentimes it's subtle, but I remember having friends, you know, and going to them and saying, man, I really think that I want to be a speaker and I want to, you know, put hope out into the world. And people being like, oh, girl, you can't do that. I mean, what you talking about? Girl, you know, you crazy. God ain't about to use you. And and it could have been just them projecting and, you know, joking and all the things. But one of the boundaries that I have in friendships is that we don't accept negative talk. And I tell my friends that early on. I've created boundaries around that, boundaries around, you know, little nicknames. And there's just so much power in our tongue that we have to be mindful of what people are saying to us and what they're speaking over our lives, because we could quickly begin to accept those things. I know there are words that my dad spoke over me that I'm still battling to this day. It's like, you are not that. He said that out of a place of weakness. It is okay. You've forgiven him for it. But those words still linger in our hearts and minds. So big red flags, negative self-talk. Like, you just got shut. You got to shut that down. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now in relationships, like with your boo thing, I think you have to be mindful of control. That was something that I just didn't notice early on. And I was attracted to controlling men because of my dad and men that would call you out of your name and really aggressive and assertive. But I remember having a boyfriend that was just really controlling over my time. Oh, you don't need those friends. Oh, you don't. You just need me. Like, what are you talking about? No, you're going out. Why are you going out with those people? And what I realized is that that controlling behavior turned into abusive behavior, and it just kind of trickled down. And it was just him clamoring for closeness and belonging, but it was super unhealthy, because when we stay isolated and away from community, I think that's when the enemy attacks us with shame. Mm-hmm. Because there were things I was doing in that relationship that needed to come to the light so it could be healed. But I couldn't let it because I was under this boyfriend who was super controlling. So those are just a few.
Mm. So good. So much wisdom, Tony. Mm. Tell us a little bit about, how do people get your book? What do you hope that they get out of this book? And then where can they get it?
I'm really excited about it, y'all. I am.
What's the title?
The title is Brave Enough to Be Broken.
Love it.
And a subtitle is How to Embrace Your Pain and Find Hope and Healing. And I think I'm excited because I just came off the audio book. I've been in the studio for the last couple of days recording it. And so just reading that content and, you know, you just feel naked. You know, I feel emotionally naked for sure because I'm telling all my business. But also I feel, I'm kind of emotional about this. Wow. I feel really grateful. And I think I feel grateful because all of those hard parts of my story serves an incredible purpose now. And I really do get the opportunity to say, I've been through abuse in sexual ways, spiritual ways, eating disorder, drugs, alcohol. I've been through all of this. And maybe it sucked at the time, but now I get to help other women who have been through all of those things, or maybe just one or two, have a roadmap. Like, it's not going to be as hard for them to heal, right? Mm-hmm. And it was hard to heal. When you, again, I come from the African-American community. For us, counseling is like, are you psychotic? Like, what's going on? You having a mental break? What's happening here? Why are you in counseling? I was like, well, no, I just want somebody to talk to. But it was really hard. It was foreign to me. Healing was foreign. Counseling was foreign. I didn't even know where to look or Google it. And now I've taken that really rocky, weird journey that I was on, and I've like put it into a roadmap on pages, helped people like go through a step-by-step process of like, you can heal and find hope. Here's a roadmap for you. And so I'm just really, really excited about it. And people can like go, it's like in all the things. I don't even know how to talk about it. It's in all of the Barnes and Nobles and the Amazons and all the things in the world. If you want to just get to know like what it's all about, I have our website, tonyjcollier.com/brave. And you can go learn about it. And it's so great.
I love it. And we'll make sure that's all in the show notes. And are you on social media?
I am on social medias. I love Instagreezy. I'm a little crazy on there, but it is what it is. I post like really deep content and then all of a sudden I'm like screaming on an Insta story, you know? but it's Tony J. Collier on everything. TONIJCOLLIER.
I love it. Get used to this. There's much more coming your way. So thank you, Tony. Yay. There's so much good stuff here. And I'm so grateful for you being willing to give all of who you are to God. Yay. So he can use it. He waits for us to give him permission. And a lot of us fight him, you know, but he's like, I've got something good. If you'll let me, if you'll let me take this and come alongside you as a good father. So
yeah, and thank you. Your smile tells the story, that Tony. Yeah. It's just like, that's something that I just, it shows the joy that you have for what he's carried you through and what you get to do in his kingdom work. And it just, that you radiate that. It's beautiful. It's contagious. It's move to Oregon. Come
work with he wants to be our neighbor.
Loading up. All right, you guys. Loading it's Sam up. And Sam Jr. Come on, let's go.
Listen, if y'all thought I had energy, this family of mine, we're all like this. We're on 10. Hopefully this little new one is like kind of balances us out, but we're all real crazy.
Yeah, the little one. We need a little bit of a mellower. I love it. I love the energy. Thank you, Tony. Thank you for everything that you're bringing to the table. So if you love what you're hearing, make sure you share this on social or leave a review. We are wanting many people to find out how they can live more wholehearted, to live with integrity in our homes and our work and in our communities, to be able to bring all of who we are before God and one another. And we're so grateful that you're on this journey with us. Jeff and I, we're trying to do this in real time ourselves as parents and colleagues and what else are we? We're married.
Yeah, professionals. You got to practice everything that we're talking about here.
It's to practice what we preach.
Good and hard work.
Yeah, it is. But if you want to learn more, go to livingwholehearted.com. And we're so grateful for you and all that you're bringing to the world in your community.
This podcast is powered by Living Wholehearted, Courageous Girls, and the Christian Parenting Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us in this critical movement of shrinking our integrity gaps between what we preach and live.